if the secret to transforming a school wasn't a new program, a bigger budget, or the latest initiative, but something far more human? Today on Love, Sweat, and Tears, I am sitting down with the Todd Nasloney, once an instructional aide, later a principal, and now the director of culture and strategic development at TEPSA. Todd has spent his career proving that authentic leadership and cult school culture aren't just buzzwords, guys. They're the heartbeat of thriving schools. So in this episode, we dive into his playbook for building trust, empowering students, and creating cultures that last long after one leader has moved on. And so if you're a school leader who's ready to reignite belief, belonging, and bold innovation in your campus, this is the conversation you don't want to miss. And so, Todd, we are so excited to welcome you to our podcast. How are you?
I am good, and I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for the invite.
Oh, gosh. You are the Todd Nasloney. Okay, so let me give you a little tidbit. When I was principal and I had just opened Copperfield Elementary like eons ago, I mean, I think it was 10 years ago, Todd, I remember picking up your book. Do you know which book that I probably was reading out in the stands while my son was, while my son was playing baseball, because I was a baseball mom and I spent a lot of time, you know, doing a lot of learning in the stands. And that was the very first book that I read when I didn't even have a face with a name. I just had picked up that book. It had been recommended by a colleague, and I read it from, you know, front to back within one sitting. And so that was that your first book, or?
That was, yes, that was the very first book that made everything else go crazy from there.
Wow. So tell us about Todd. I mean, tell us about you. Who is Todd? I mean, I know you through TEPSA and just different things along the way, because I followed you way before you even became, you know, were on board with TEPSA. So Give us a little like quick, this is the Todd Nasloney. And guys, if you've never heard him speak, he is just a dynamic speaker. Like when he walks into the room, it just lights up. The whatever feel is just a lift of positive hops in when Todd walks in the room. So give us a little bit about, what are some nuggets that you want our audience to know about Todd?
Well, first of all, you're too kind. But second of all, so I always knew I wanted to work with kids in some capacity. And it just ended up being education. I have several family members who are in education. Started as an instructional aide. I was actually in a teaching program in high school that kind of let high school students see if they wanted to be a teacher. And I was like, yep, this is what I want to do. So during college, I was an instructional aide. Then I got hired as a teacher. Then I moved into the principal role. Now I get to work for TEPSA as well as speaking and consulting all around the world. And then I've written some books. I've gotten married in the meantime. I have, as of this recording, they are 4 years old, but I have twin 4 year olds. So life is busy.
Busy and exciting. Yes. Wow, the work that you're doing. And the boys, I can remember following you when your wife was pregnant and just the journey through that. It's almost like a leadership journey within itself, right?
it's so funny how that's what social media has allowed us to do, is to be a part of each other's lives in new and creative ways. And yeah, there's drawbacks to it, but this is one of those positive things that social media has provided as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So culture is at your core, Todd. Culture is truly at the core of the work that you do. And so why, just tell our audience, like, why do you feel that it's one of the most important things that a principal can focus on?
Yeah. You know, I think of why this became important to me personally. And a lot of that stems from my own experience as a student in education. And, you know, that was one of the driving factors of me becoming an educator, was that I didn't have a bad experience in education by any means. I was well behaved because I knew my mama would deal with me if I was not. And I got decent grades, so they stayed off my back. But at the same time, I don't remember any adults. I don't remember the investment. I don't remember a connection. I don't remember any of that. And so I knew that I wanted to be in education to make things different for kids who may feel the same way. Like, what am I doing in this machine where I don't feel seen or valued or even like acknowledged that I exist? And so that became big to me when I was in the classroom teaching. Then when I moved into that role as a campus administrator, that's when things just blew my mind of going, oh my goodness, like that feeling I had as a kid and that feeling I was trying to provide in my classroom, like that's what a whole school could feel like. Mm-hmm. Like if every single person, not just the students, but if every single person could have that feeling of, not only do I belong here, not only am I a part of something bigger than myself, but like my contribution matters. And not only does it matter, but people see it and acknowledge it mm-hmm. and make me feel like I am not just a replaceable piece in a machine that's going to keep moving even after I'm gone. And that's when I was like, you know what? This is something I really want to invest in, where it's not just about the students. It's not just about the teachers. It's about every single person that plays a role in the lives and in making a school a success. And so it just became something that I became obsessed with myself. And then I feel like I was able to do some really cool things that were different or that were important to me. And it just allowed me to get recognition in weird ways for things that I was like, oh my goodness, like this is so basic. But I think we always look at ourselves and our things that we do as like, everybody's doing it, until you realize, no, all of us are doing something different and all of us have special gifts. And that's why we have to share them.
Right, right. So, I mean, I feel like this is such a timely topic in that being a principal, I don't know about you when you're, you know, walking campuses or interacting with leaders across the state and nation, but being a leader right now is probably harder than it's ever been. And when you think about the recruitment, retention, and just the turnover rate, it's mind-boggling. And so if you have people who have never experienced any of your work and you were thinking, okay, what could be that one strategy or thing that I could do just to start, just to tip the iceberg on building that culture of trust and belonging, what would you say that would be? Where could they start?
Well, you know, I think that that's such a interesting question. And why I say that is because I really feel like for everybody, it's going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But I think one of my big passions in doing this work right now is kind of redefining things that the system has made us believe that may not necessarily be true. And one of those things is that I've got to take care of everybody else and then I can focus on me. And the reality is, if you don't take care of you, you're not going to be good enough to take care of anybody else. And so I think one thing is leaders need to have that permission that it is okay to take a personal day. It is okay to go to the dentist. It is okay to take your kid to the doctor when they need to go. It's okay to do these things. And one thing that's been a big life changer for me is getting involved in therapy. And it's one of those things that I was like, I wish I didn't get involved in having a therapist until I was already in my position now at TEPSA. But I wish I had done it as a school leader, because I feel like I would have been 1,000 times better for my people, because I would have better understood my thoughts and my actions and my words and what they were doing and how I could be even the best version of myself and how always looking and growing. And so when I think about, you know, like, where do you start? I think you got to start with you. And that's even a big part of my last book in building authenticity, was that who you are is how you're going to lead. So if you are burnt out and frazzled, that's how you're going to lead, is a burnt out and frazzled person. Right. If you're broken by the system, if you're all these things. But I feel like we don't give ourselves permission enough to do that. We act like if we brag about being too busy to even enjoy a lunch, like that's a badge of honor. And it's like,
I totally know what you're talking about. I remember when I first became a principal, because you are who raises you professionally, right? Because we're like little kids. We're sponges, even as aspiring leaders. You know, our kids, if you have kids, they emulate the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, and you're like, I'm never going to have my child do that. And then you see them doing it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's really what I'm doing. They're modeling that after me. But the same thing happens when you're a leader. I remember starting out, I worked 24/7. People had access to me. They could text me whenever. And I modeled it because I would reach out to my staff. And one thing that you really touched on, Todd, that probably my last 2020. Okay, 2020, we all know what happened. The world personally came crashing down on me when I was principal. I had, my husband went through a very big health scare. He was diagnosed with a syndrome that, like, I mean, only 100,000 people in the world are diagnosed with, that they were able to figure out. His business went from 100% to zero, where he was working for nothing, paying the people he employed just to keep them on board. And we took no salary. Right. I was in a school where, of course, the pandemic was happening, but the adults around me, which was my family population, and I'm not going to give too much because I like to be, but it was like, I had all of these little arrows, I feel like, pointing at me. And I reached out for help. I had never done that. The employee assistance program. What do you do as principal when people come in with their emotional needs? What's the first thing we offer them? Do you know that you get 5 free visits through our employee assistance program? And you give them the little letter, you listen to them, and then you follow up to see that they're taking care of them. I had to make that phone call and take care of me. And for one, it was humbling in that I don't know. My family, I'd never experienced that, going, asking for help in that way. But two, it was so very powerful. It was affirming in asking for help, going through the stages that I was going through, giving me tools in my toolbox that I was able to put up boundaries, which I hadn't given my permission to do with the parents, with my family, but in a healthy way. And do you want to know what, Todd? It really helped me in my conversations going forward with staff members when they were going through a struggle. For me as the principal to be able to say, hey, I don't advertise this when we're at a staff meeting, but I actually took advantage of our employee assistance. And I so wish, like you were just talking about, I had done that way earlier, because when we're building trust with our people around us, modeling it is the first step, right?
Yep. Modeling it. I think a lot of it comes down to kind of what you mentioned too, of this whole idea of, for so many of us in your generation and mine and all those around us, it's like we were all raised in that world of, you don't ask for help. Like, you are put in that position.
Right.
You figure it out. You get it done. Mm-hmm. You ask for this. And the reality is, that's not going to work, especially in education. Like, we have to do that. And I think sometimes the misconception is, oh, if I'm prioritizing me, it's like, I'm number one. Me, 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 me. Well, I'm supposed to be leading. It's like, no. Like, there is a middle ground here. Like, you have to take a lunch. You have to go spend time with friends and family. You have to leave the campus at a normal time. Like, if you want to thrive in this world, you've got to do those things. And I think it's becoming more normalized, but it's still, it was very hard for me to get to that point where I could consider therapy or I could consider these things, because it was so opposite of the way I had been raised. It was so opposite of what I held to my beliefs until that time. And I will never forget being in a training one time, and the professional development leader was like, hey, you know what? Why do you go see the dentist? Like, why does everybody go to the dentist twice a year? And I'm like, well, we're told to. Like, you're supposed to get your teeth checked. And he's like, okay, when you have a kid, why do you take them to their 1 month appointment? Why do you take them to their year? And I'm like, well, we're supposed to. He's like, okay, so you do understand, like, that appointments are important, like, they make a difference, like, there's value in them. Mm-hmm. He said, so why, when it comes to mental health, do we sit there and go, oh, no, I don't need that right now, I'm good. It's like, how do you know? Like, I think he said, I really believe that every single human should be seeing someone at least twice a year. Mm-hmm. He said, just like a dentist, just a check-in. And I was like, you know what? Life's going good right now. I'm going to go see somebody, because if it don't help me when it's going good, I'm definitely not going to believe it for when it's a struggle. And I've been going over since then for like 6 years now. So it's made a difference. But I think all these little things are just that whole idea of making sure you're your best self. And it's a learning process, and it's different for each of us. I think you also brought up something really good too about how are you modeling it for your team? So like, what time are you sending emails out? Are you sending texts back after 8 p.m. when somebody texts you? Like, all that sends messages of,
sure does.
I'm it's okay to run over me, or I don't value personal time.
Correct.
Like, it's hard for us to hear that. Like, don't tell me I don't value personal time, Todd. I was just responding. It's like, I know, but the message that's being sent mm-hmm. is I'm available to you whenever. Like, you're my number one.
Right.
Not I have time for me and I'll respond when it's appropriate.
Gosh, I hope that people listening right now understand that it's okay to turn it off. Like, that mm-hmm. is how you build a culture of trust, right? Yeah. That's at the foundational yeah. level of where yeah. you're honoring people's time and talent by giving them permission to know that once you leave the building, I would stay late. I would stay late 4 days, come in early and stay late 4 days of the week, so that by Friday, mm-hmm. once everyone was off, everyone got on the bus and we knew they were home, I was mm-hmm. like, you know, getting the key and walking out the door, because I wanted to model that for them so that they knew it's yeah. okay. And some days I got done earlier than others. And so,
yeah.
So what about when you're overcoming, I'm just thinking there may be principals that are leaders that are listening right now that are walking into a turnaround school.
Yeah.
Because many times, let's be real, Todd, many times people who are going from the assistant principal to the principal role are not always walking. Some get the opportunity to be in a high performing school, but I would say 9 times out of 10, that first door that opens in the principalship is in a school that needs some work. Could be within the academic realm, could be within the overall social cultural realm of the teachers. And so overcoming, just coming into a school like that, when morale is low, I mean, do you have one idea of where someone could start with that?
You know, I love this question because that's exactly what I went through. Like, my first principalship was in a turnaround school. I had to hire an entire staff. And then the next year they reconfigured campuses. And so I got moved to a campus with double the staff, where they combined from other. It was so I know exactly what you're talking about jumping in there into the fire and wondering, how do I survive? And I think for me, when I think of the best way to begin that shift, to me, it comes down to remembering there's three things that we all have in common. Every single human on this earth wants to feel seen, wants to feel valued, and wants to feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I always work with other people on is, whether you are a teacher in the classroom trying to build culture, or you're an administrator or central office trying to build culture in your district or on your campus, if you're not addressing one of those three needs with what you're doing may be sweet and nice and lovely, but it's not going to change culture if it doesn't make an individual feel seen, heard, or valued.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge mind shift for me. Because when I first became an administrator, I was like, well, I'm giving them free food. I bought everybody right. this branded water bottle. Like, I'm giving them all these things because that's what I was right. told to do. Like, I know teachers love free stuff. So that's how I'm going to start changing the culture. Well, guess what? That's great. And it's nice. And don't stop doing that.
Right.
But the shift I had to have was, that doesn't mean that's going to change culture. Because giving everybody a snack, giving everybody a branded water bottle, all those kind of things, it doesn't make an individual feel valued for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make an individual feel seen for what they bring to the table or heard. And so, though it's nice, and again, I'm not telling anybody to stop doing that, my biggest advice is, how are you getting to know the people mm-hmm. that you serve? Because leadership is about serving. That's
right.
how great leaders lead, is they serve their people. So for me, that was I sent out a survey every year just to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And it was simple. Like, what's your favorite salty snack? What's your favorite sweet snack? We had a Sonic down the road. So I was like, what's your favorite Sonic drink? What do you love for coffee? And then one question that I loved putting on there as well was, who is someone that you absolutely love? And what is their phone number and their mailing address?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I collected that information, because I had 100-something member staff.
Right.
Like, it was going to take me time to build those in-depth connections with each of them. But
right.
the survey got me a head start, because then I could be like, okay, Julie in kindergarten, she is on the struggle bus. I know I'm just getting to know her, but I also know She loves Reese's Pieces. So that was in her survey. I'm going to go pick her some up before I go check on her. And when I go down to check on her and build that relationship, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I also know you love Reese's Pieces. So like, I brought these for you just because I wanted to let you know, like, I really care about you as a person too. And it's in those little bitty things that it's not about the snack. It's not about the drink. It's not about that. It's about in that moment, that person going, wait a minute, you remembered something I shared and you brought it just for me and you thought of me. Like, that's one of those kind of like, ooh, okay. Like, this person sees me for a little bit more. And then moving into what I had on the survey as well about their loved one, I think sometimes when we're building those connections and those relationships, we have to remember that people are more than just who you see right in front of you.